You're watching The Sports Objective, the podcast for Pirates. You're listening to Absolute Empowerment with Coach Jeff Connors on The Sports Objective. Join Coach C, the USA Strength and Conditioning Hall of Famer, every Monday night to see in a variety of guests, including former players, former and current coaches, pastors, and others will discuss relevant issues in coaching today's athlete, with the goal of equipping the athlete and those coaching them with the physical, mental, and spiritual armor necessary to live their best life. Here's Coach Connors.
Welcome to Absolute Empowerment. I'm very excited about our guest this week, former UNC defensive end and first round draft pick of the New York Jets in 2012, Quentin Copels. Welcome to the show, Quentin, and it was definitely my pleasure to coach you at UNC through, I think, the majority of your career.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, Big C, you definitely left an imprint on me and my life and changed the trajectory that I was on. So I'm grateful for you as well.
I'm going to go ahead and recognize my sponsor, and then we'll roll.
Okay, sounds good.
Ed Watkins Marine has two locations to serve you, as they are located in Denver and Cornelius, North Carolina, in the greater Charlotte area of our state. He has fishing boats, pleasure boats, pontoon boats, center consoles, family-friendly bow riders, trailers, engines, and UTVs. He has all the brands you are seeking: Sea Pro, Suncatcher, Pontoons, Tritoons, Stingray, Yamaha, Suzuki, Mercury, Vexus Bass Boats, Explore Skiffs, and more. Whether you're looking for a new boat or to repower your existing boat, Ed Watkins can help you with your boating needs. Visit them online at edwatkinsmarine.com. We appreciate Big Ed's support of the show. Thank you, Big Ed Watkins. All right, so Quentin, you know where to go if you need a boat.
Yeah, facts. I do so now.
The first thing I want to get into is kind of go back to the very young Quentin Copels. And, you know, when I came to North Carolina back in 1991, I didn't know much about Eastern North Carolina. But every time someone would mention Kinston, it was kind of like, Kinston's kind of a tough place, a rough place. And, you know, I didn't know much about it. But then, you know, I coached several guys, several young men that came from Kinston who I was very impressed with, like Kevin Ward. Was Kelvin Suggs from Kinston?
Kelvin Suggs.
I think he might have been from there.
Yeah. He was there. Yeah, I know you're talking about now.
And how about Willie P's boy, Chris Hawkins?
Chris Hawk from Kinston.
I'm very interested to hear about kind of like the details of you growing up, your influences, and your experience growing up in Kinston, and basically give me some information as to how Kinston produces all these fine athletes.
It's something in the water, as the old folks say. it's a very small town, Eastern North Carolina. It holds great traditional values throughout the city. It's been a place where it kind of has a bad rep in regards to tough things, crime and poverty rate. But there's a lot of historical tradition things that have transpired over time. It's one of those stopping places where you, if you're in travel, you know, if you head to the beach or, you know, you're going to Fort Bragg or anywhere, you know, Camden June, wherever you're going, it's a place that you could just stop by, get a good meal, meet some good people. We've had plenty of celebrities and different people of, you know, high recognition stop by and, embrace the city. But it was tough. It was tough growing up. It's one of those places where, you know, everybody kind of know everybody. But, you know, due to poverty and different, aspects of life that negatively affect you, we have had so much crime and per capita. I think we like number top five in regards to crime per capita. So nothing that I'm proud of, but it's a rough place when it can be, but it's also a place that will embrace and love you if you do right by them. So I was one of those, I had the opportunity to, you know, embrace my city and do right by them. And I've had hiccups and things of that nature, but for the most part, it was a pleasure, you know, being from Kinston. And like you said before, we have so many athletes that have come out of there. It's one of those places where I think some of everybody has it, but I don't think everybody embraces it. So we have a pride in regards to being successful in sports specifically. We have some people who have been successful in other areas, but sports specifically, when it came to basketball and football, there was a certain pride that we just felt like we was the best. And that was, we competed with each other all the time. So the city is the town is divided in two parts. So there's a up the hill and there's a down the hill. So it's a hill that divides the two. And, you know, down the hill is more poverty than up the hill. Up the hill was kind of more middle class. We ain't never really have a high class at all, but it's more middle class. And so, you know, growing up, I grew up down the hill, and then on the back end of my life, my upbringing, I moved up the hill. So it was just, you know, more opportunities, you know, better structure than down the hill. But for the most part, it's a small town, so you're not really getting away from too much at all.
Right. Now, as I remember, I think you were very close to your mother, true?
Correct.
And can you talk about her a little bit and, you know, talk about her influence on your life?
Yeah. Me and my mom, I'm the baby boy, so I'm the last one or whatever. So she, you know, it was a gift and a curse. She spoiled me and she was kind of hard on me as well because, you know, being able, she had to do that by herself. It was a very hard challenge for her to be able to, you know, maintain the house. I think my sister is 8 years older than me, so she had to end up going to college. And so it was, you know, trying to help her put her through school, get me straight. And I always was trying to, you know, keep me involved with sports to be able to stay out the street. It was a tremendous thing now that I look at it. It was a tremendous thing that she did. I know the story kind of seems familiar, but when you in it in real time, it's a different type of grind. It's a different type of breed. So, you know, I've had to be, you know, to her job. I've had to be, you know, while she working, I'd be at the job. I've, you know, had, you know, family step up and watch me while she was working. So I've been through the loops, but I seen the sacrifice that she made to make sure that I had an opportunity. And the thing about that is that the opportunity isn't guaranteed. It's one of those things where it's like, I'm doing this, but with it's faith, right? And it's belief in something that is unseen. And I think that she did an incredible job. I'm grateful that, you know, God gave me her, and I was able to embrace that and take that on within my journey as well.
Well, I love to hear stories of overcoming adversity through faith. Can you just tell me a little bit about your faith and who started to influence you in that direction? Because you seem to be a very strong Christian these days from everything I've seen. So yeah. Tell me a little bit about that.
I try to tell people, and it kind of sounds cliche, but my whole life is faith. Again, coming from the smallest city that I was raised in, if you was to graduate from high school, you was up in the upper echelon. If you was able to land a factory job, you're in the top tier. So that's all I knew. Like, that's really, like, that was the peak. That was, it's like, if you can, you know, make it through high school, you good, you like middle. And if you get a factory job, you top tier. So that was, you know, that's the only goals I ever had, was get out of high school, get a factory job, and live what we thought was the American dream from where I'm from. All my life, you know, my whole family, you know, is in the church. You know, they serve at some capacity. My grandma was an assistant pastor, associate pastor. My mom did every kind of, you know, every ministry within the church in regards to serving. I've served usher, and I've served security over my entire life in regards to church. And so it was to basically describe it, it's literally every single thing. It's like one of those things where I have a trouble really articulating my life story because it's literally by faith. Like nothing was ever planned. Nothing was ever like, I grinded so hard that it made it. It's like, no, I did what I was asked and I put in work, but I didn't know that. Like, I didn't know where my limit was. I didn't know where, you know, my peak was. I didn't know where I was going. It was just literally living day by day, and basically God orchestrated people to be in my life to kind of direct my path, whether that was through coaches, principals, guys around the neighborhood, different things like that. But faith is everything to me, because I have nothing without it. I'm not successful without it. I'm not be able to accomplish the things that I have without it. I have no answer besides, like, literally God had walked me through this thing called life. Now, these last few years, I've been in a season where he's pushed me to grow to another level. But up until now, it's been God orchestrating my path, and you just seeing Q live it out. I had no option, didn't have no choice. But it's faith wholeheartedly. You know, what Jesus did for us, it's unimaginable. And to be able to return the favor by entrusting him, keeping him first, and following the path that he has directed for me already, is one of the greatest honors that I can have.
Well, thanks so much for sharing that. And do you live in Kinston now?
No, sir.
Okay.
I'm actually in Alpharetta, Georgia.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm in Alpharetta, Georgia right now.
I had no clue.
Really? Yeah, nah. I was in Charlotte prior to here for about 3 or 4 years. I was in Cali prior to that, which was Santa Ana, California. Grateful that I was there before all the craziness going on over there now. And then I was in New York. And then I went to Miami for a little bit to finish a contract up.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Are you involved in any community projects or foundations or anything like that?
Yeah. My whole my fraternity is, you know, it does tremendous jobs in regards to community service. In regards to organization outside of my fraternity and my church, no. But for the most part, I do a lot of giving back to different communities. I did serve as a assistant coach 2 years ago with one of the private schools down here. So I was able to pour into some kids and help elevate their game and their mindset to be able to transition to the next level. But outside of that, no.
Yeah, I remember the tattoo.
Yeah. The brand, yeah.
Tell me a little bit about Omega Phi Psi.
Omega Sci-Fi, yeah. Oh,
Sci-Fi, I'm
yeah,
sorry.
Sci-Fi, yeah.
So, because I hear a lot. I mean, I've coached, I don't know how many people, and coached
people
that are members of the fraternity. But, you know, all these fraternities, they got secrets and stuff, so I never ask anything. But tell me something about it that you can tell me.
It's a faith-based fraternity, despite what, you know, sometimes my brothers may display in the public eye. But for the most part, it's a fraternity of men who serve the community by any means, basically, at the end of the day. Our duty is to serve mankind. We have the principles of manhood, scholarship, perseverance, and uplift. So to exemplify what a faith man looks like, to continue to hold scholarship at a high honor, to perseverance through any trials and triumphs within life, and to always uplift the next person, always uplift the next man, next woman, next child. Whenever you have an opportunity to uplift somebody, make sure that's our duty. So we strive off those principles. It's a collection of men that's in the several thousands at this point, hundreds of thousands, really. But yeah, we do our best to make sure that we try to be the standard of what a true man looks like. And like I said, it's based out of the faith. We fall short of the glory a lot of the times in the public eye, but for the most part, in regards to what the principles and the standard of the fraternity is to uphold the faith, uphold the righteousness of the Bible and the word of God and the gospel.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's certainly a large number of individuals involved in athletics.
Yeah, and it's a collection of men that, you know, and it's a great network. It's always have somebody, you know, just like anything else, you know, whether you play in the league, football. I tell people all the time, football itself is a fraternity because you can relate to so many people based off your experiences in football. The game don't really change. It's just athletes and anything else. You know, if you're in corporate, that's a fraternity, you know, people can recognize the way you carry yourself. If you strength and conditioning, that's a, you know, training. Everything has kind of its own little box, but we're just more versatile in regards to exactly what we do. But it also holds, we also a network to make sure that we look after each other as well.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
Appreciate you sharing that.
So,
moving into our experience a little bit at UNC, and this is something I've wanted to talk about for a long time now, and I guess maybe I can talk about it a little bit since it's been over a decade now.
Yeah.
My last game there was 2010, I guess, I think it was still 2010. Maybe it was 2011, Music City Bowl.
Correct, yeah.
But in any event, yeah, that was quite a year in relationship to all the talent that we had on that team and mm-hmm. how hard we had worked for a number of years to build that talent.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I came there with Coach Bunning mm-hmm. and then was retained with Butch Davis. But, I was just going through my mind in relationship to how many people on that team went ahead and played in the NFL, but that senior year, we remember that there were a lot of suspensions going on, so a lot of our Correct. Most talented people couldn't play, and we were still 8-5 and won and beat Tennessee in that Music City Bowl. But, you know, I'm just going to go through these names. Mm-hmm. Greg Little,
mm-hmm.
NFL player, correct?
Correct.
Trey Boston.
Correct.
T.J. Yates.
Correct.
Who's still coaching with the Falcons. I went down there to a game.
Okay.
You know, Arthur Smith, of course, was the head coach there and mm-hmm. coached him. And also Dwayne Ledford is the offensive line coach who played for us at ECU.
Okay.
Kendrick Burney, did he get some time?
He went to Carolina for a little bit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Andre, yep.
Zach Pinalto, I think.
Yep. Zach P, he got a it was short-lived, but he had an opportunity.
Yeah. Now, Sean Drawn, I've had him on a podcast, so I'm very familiar with his career.
Mm-hmm.
Robert Quinn may still be playing. I don't know.
I think Brett retired. I don't think he officially retired. But, yeah, he's probably one of the top five ever to play at Carolina, to be honest.
Zach Brown, who's probably the fastest linebacker I ever coached.
Out of this world. Freak.
Kevin Reddick.
Yep. Played in New Orleans.
Bruce Carter, who was
the Cowboys. Yep. Second round to the Cowboys.
Number one testing results in everything for me.
Yeah. Yeah. They little do they know. I tell people between him, Bruce, Rob, Cam, and Al, Cam Thomas and Alaric Mullins. That was a different type of strength, man. That was some real strength.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm not going to belabor this, but, you know, the guy that came in after me took all the records down. But, you know, we broke 80-some records multiple times on that board.
Easily.
And, you know, Bruce Carter and who else am I thinking of? Robert Quinn. Yeah, they Robert both Quinn. Tied 405.
Ridiculous number. Yeah.
You know, that was not a hand clean, you know.
Not at all.
And, you know, all my big guys, we did a whole lot of stuff with double 90s on kettlebell work, you know, including you.
Facts, yeah, yeah.
And then we got, I'm still going here, Giovanni.
Go ahead. Gio, yep, Cincinnati.
He had a great career.
Yep, his best team was Cincinnati, yep.
Russell Bodine, who had a great career.
Mm-hmm. Bodine had some, yep.
Jonathan Cooper, who was no joke.
Cooper was a freak. Yeah, I wish he would have been in a better position, but he was a freak too. But it was something you can't. It's something that I'm arguing now with the whole first round. But go ahead, yeah.
James Hurst, who's still playing.
James Hurst, yep.
Okay, which is crazy.
Yeah.
Big Travis Bond, one of my favorites.
Yeah, he has a couple times with the Rams.
He used to go home and chop wood, stay in shape.
All right.
Denora Searcy, who had a great career.
Yeah, he was a Falcon, yeah.
Ryan Taylor, who, you know, through toughness.
Yeah,
played for the Packers a few years.
3 years, yeah, with Green Bay. Mm-hmm.
And then I want to ask about Quan. What happened with Quan? Did he?
Quan went to Arizona.
Okay.
It was short-lived, but he went to Arizona. Arizona picked him up, and then he got out quick. But, yeah, he had a shot at Arizona.
How about Eric Highsmith?
Eric, I think he went with the Colts. Okay. He did some training with the Colts.
Dwight Jones had great talent. I'm not sure what happened with him or where he ended up, but he was very
good. Yeah, cool. I don't think Dwight made it. Yeah. But definitely could have been in the mix, but I don't think he made it.
And then I thought Mike Ingersoll might have got a shot for a while, but I couldn't remember.
I think he got, I want to say the Colts or something. Yeah, I don't know. It was short-lived, but I don't know if he actually got in.
Yeah, so, I mean, we're talking about 22, 23, 24 guys.
You still ain't got Brandon Tate, Hakeem Nicks. You still ain't – E.J. Wilson played at Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
Marv got drafted by the Giants.
Marvin Austin.
Yeah, Marvin Austin got drafted by the Giants. Air Ebron. Went to the Colts first round. Sylvester Williams went to Denver first round.
Came in while I was still there.
Yeah. How am I messing up his name? Martin. Last name Martin.
Kareem Martin.
Kareem. I'm tripping. Yeah. Kareem Martin, second round, I think, first round, one of them to the Giants. Chase Rice got a shot. It was short lived, but he got a shot.
I had Chase on a podcast.
Yeah, and he's killing it. With the country music. Oh my gosh. I keep running into people that know him. Like, as soon as they find out I'm from Carolina, they start like going in. I'll be like, yeah, Chase, I know him. Jay Boyd played with Cincinnati for a little bit. Charlie Brown, he went to Cleveland.
Brown, yeah.
Yeah, he played with Cleveland for a little bit.
These are all guys on the same team.
Yeah, this is all on the same team.
I've never talked about this with anybody. It's like, I mean, if it wasn't for the guys, and you know, how many guys got suspended? I don't know, 7, 8 starters? I don't know.
I think it was like 18 or 22 overall. It was 11 starters, and if you compare like both sides, and then the rest of them was role players.
So you get 11 starters suspended, and you still win 8 games and beat Tennessee.
Yeah. And if you want to go into that, like even with the suspension, it depends on how you look at it. But even with the suspension, it was all off like allegations. It wasn't nothing concrete.
Exactly.
So they never found anything, but I talked to the lawyer, coincidentally, when I came out. I was actually went to an ESPN party, and me and the lawyer is literally in line together having this discussion. The lawyer that was the NCAA hired to basically investigate us. And I talked to him. I said, hey, tell me a little bit about, you know, what happened or what was going on. And he was like, he was like, basically, to make a long story short, he was like, we was knocking. The university kept saying no. We was knocking. The university kept saying no. He said, we did that quite a few times. So we started packing our stuff up because we was like, they're not letting us in. We can't like enforce ourselves in. Like, we don't have nothing to actually, you know, go in and actually use against them. So it is what it is. So they was like, all right, we're going to pack our stuff up. We're going to try one more time. And they tried one more time. And the university felt like they had them in a position. They felt like the university felt like we was guilty because they never been in a situation where we couldn't pay them off. So this situation was unique to us. And so we're unique to the university. And so they had already been saying no, and they felt like it was going to get worse. But little did they know, there was one no away from this never happening, from just going away. And so he said that, you know, because they let us in, now we get a chance to investigate. And so then we started finding this little stuff that they were trying to say, like they were trying to use the tutor. And I'm like, we have a tutor. That's, you know, that's what the tutor is there for, like to correct your mistakes, to help you understand like what exactly is wrong. And they didn't have, like, they was trying to say that the tutor did the work itself, but it's like, no, in correction, you have to show where the issue was, where you was wrong with the issue and whatnot. And so they tried to do that. Then they tried to use the AFAM class. Well, I talked to a bunch of scholars and a bunch of people. I said, would you find it difficult if somebody gave you a semester to write a 55-page paper and you only get one shot to turn it in?
Yeah.
Like, it's no like, oh, let me go back and recheck. Let me go to office hours and try to figure something out or get some extra credit. No. You get one shot. You turn that paper in, and whatever you turn in is what your grade is for the whole semester. And you have to be, you know, because some of us have similar prompts. So you have to be very diligent in your research, because you can't, you know, you can't copy anybody's work or anything of that nature. Like, none of that can be... none of that can be seen in the research. So if they find that out, then you get a zero, and then you fail that course. So it's not a difficult, it's not a hard, I mean, it's not an easy thing. But then you have like a, you may have some people who's taking like landscape. Now, I'm not in the landscape business, but I would think researching apartheid in Ghana will be a little bit more difficult than understanding the science behind lawn care. Right. But we have other schools who have landscaping as a course that is recognized as a course, and I'm like, what's really the difference? But overall, he said that yeah, they wouldn't have let us in. Y'all would have been good because we didn't have anything. It was all speculation, and I actually beat it because they actually brought me in for investigation. So I had the opportunity to actually be investigated and walk through that process. Face on. So yeah, they try to get me as well.
Yeah, it was really a crazy deal. I mean, you know, the NCAA came in and sat down with me for like 2 hours and wanted to talk to me. And they're talking about academics. I said, hey, you know, I had a 3.8 from Bucknell University. And you know, my I was gonna be a high school principal, so
you're right.
Don't tell me anything about somebody that doesn't appreciate education. I was gonna be an educator before I decided to be a strength coach. So
correct, yeah.
And you know, my goal was to be a superintendent of schools for our district. So that's what I was studying to be at the time.
Right.
So it was really crazy. But you know, I don't know how many of these guys that Coach Bunning had signed. You know, Coach Bunning was my guy. You know, when Butch came in, I'm sure he brought a number of these guys in as well. But I really think that some of Coach Bunning's recruiting had helped Butch as well, you know. So
it was a foundation. Yeah, yeah, it was a foundation. You know, the Cam Thomas, the Alaric Mullins, EJ Wilson. Yeah, it was the Kentuan Bomber. Like, you know, those were, I mean, they had Kentuan for a year, but, you know, that's Bunning still, that's Bunning class. So, no, that was, you know, Ed Barham, you know, they got to experience both sides. But like, those are the people who were the foundation, because we were still, we had the talent, but we were still young. And then,
yeah, I mean, I can appreciate the talent, of course. And, but man, as a strength coach, I was just really happy to say, hey, man, we're going to have about 25, 30 guys here going to play in the NFL. So, you know, hopefully we're doing something good in the training as well.
And, listen,
you know what, yeah. Butch had sat me down with, and I thought Butch did a great job convincing the guys to stay, you know, mm-hmm. all those guys that could have went out early.
Yeah.
And then basically all this started to happen. And then Butch said, hey, man, can you take it a little bit easy on the seniors this year? I was like, I don't know how to take that.
Right.
It's like, oh, you know, all that stuff you do, carrying concrete up the stadium.
So, yeah. Yeah, nah, that was a blessing though, because like I tell them, if you meet anybody who has been under your coaching, and to this day, I don't know if this is in your repertoire or what, but I don't know if this is just the byproduct of what you do, or is it like just something that you indirectly instilled in us. I've never met someone that you have coached. I'm talking about from the Norris McClary's to me. Like, I've never seen someone like so confident that no man in the world can stop them.
Yeah.
Like, each and every time anybody's been a part of your program, I've never seen them back down from any challenge of a man in front of them. And that's total, you know, not because I'm on the show or nothing like that. I can go right now to this day, and we realize that we're a little older and we ain't really got it like we used to, but you can't tell us, because of what you've done and how you built us up, you can't tell us that the man in front of us is going to stop us. We don't believe it. You're going to have to show us. There's no doubt about it. And so what you did to us, the confidence level, it was almost arrogance, but rightfully so, because we put in the work. I mean, what is it? Never leave your soldier or something, where we put your position, lineman, on your back and you have to run the stadiums. I come from, you know, Noah's telling us how you had them crawling on the barbed wires and all kinds of like crazy things that triggered our mind and turned us and raised us from boys to men. And that's a, you know, and kudos to you, because I've never had a strength coach that had me at the strength that you had me at the conditioning that you had me at, and had me at the confidence that you had me at. And so, you know, kudos to you, hats off to you. You raised some strong giants within the nation, and they're still all over, still currently to this day. So more power to you, because, you know, those training days and the things that you did was life-changing. And I think that is the byproduct of why we felt like, if you don't suspend us, we go to the national championship.
Yeah.
You know, that just hands down.
Yeah, I really appreciate that, man. I think we had 8 first rounders when I was there. So mm-hmm. I was very proud of that. You know, I was out of the box a little bit. And,
yeah.
You know, this all started when I was at East Carolina, when, you know, we had the chip on the shoulder and all that, and had a lot mm-hmm. of kids that were, some of which were 2 stars and 3 stars, not many 4 or 5 stars ever.
Right.
So we had to find a way to grind, and you know, and those kids, you know, they upset a lot of teams they weren't supposed to beat. And then when I came to Carolina, I just tried to bring that same mentality there. That was mm-hmm. tough. You know, it was tough to bring it there.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Because, you know, hey, I'm not going to say the things that I did were not over the top, but at the same time, I progressed guys into it over time, you know, whether it was the conditioning or the strength training or whatever, we progressed over time to get that result. So, I thought that I, that I had a good progression of training in that respect. So, you know, it wasn't dangerous, for instance.
No, I don't think nobody received it as dangerous neither. Yeah. Because I look at certain stuff and just how people carry themselves, the patterns and different things. Like maybe a month and a half or 2 months, maybe like 3 months ago. It might have been as much as 3 months ago. I have a trainer that's a bodybuilder and whatnot. And again, a byproduct of you is he's deadlifting like 600 pounds or whatever. Now, I haven't deadlifted that kind of weight for a while or whatever. But again, I have Big C in me. So it ain't nothing that, you know, you're going to put on that bar that I ain't going to test. You know what I mean? Like, I ain't going to take myself out. But at the end of the day, it is what it is. So he didn't believe I could do it. You know, retired football player, X, Y, Z, ain't really pushed his weight or whatever. It's like, all right, cool. So I did it like two or three times or whatever. And then, like, he was kind of like blown away by it. He's got like blown away. And I'm like, nah, you don't. And I give your credit all the time. Like, you don't know who like gave me this, like who put this in me. Like, there ain't going to be nothing too much that you're going to put on, you know, that's going to fear me, that's going to put me, make me scared. And then like the transitions from that, I look at somebody like Jamal Womble, who hasn't, you know, all the beatdowns that you gave him. When I say beatdowns, that's like disciplinary. We call disciplinary lifting beatdowns for the listeners. But all the beatdowns he had to go through because of his character and how he was handling his business at school. I look at him and then I get online and I see in October, November of last year, he wanted to do a weight transition because he's out there in Cali. So okay. He wanted to do a weight transition. Like changes, he got fat, you know, drinking and having fun out there, all the parties and stuff. And he's doing like some acting things. Okay. I look at that and then I see him do a body transition to like a month ago, him deadlifting 615, 655, something like that, with ease. And this is a kid, like this guy he didn't go to the league.
Yeah, he was slapped together though, man.
Man, I'm looking at him like jealous. Like, I work out every day. And then I see him just make up in his mind, like, hey, I want to change my body or whatever. And then he put a weight belt on and just deadlift 655 like it's nothing, you know. And then, like, telling people he can go up if he wanted to. Like, just astronomically strong, like, just out of this world, crazy strength. But I know that's a byproduct of what you put in. Like, that's what it is. Like, when it comes to this weight stuff, it's whatever, it's a gift that you have that has empowered men across this world to be able to do great things, specifically in the weight room, for sure, but to do great things overall. But when it comes to, can a man in front of me stop me, or can this weight on this bar not be lifted? It's Big C clicking every time. Every time.
I appreciate that very much. The, you know, I really try to get results, but I really loved working with the guys, man. I mean, it's something I really had a passion for. You know, I'm a, besides my family, you know, I would never trade my experience with the team, with the guys. I mean, that was really special for me every single day.
Right.
And that's what I miss right now, of course, that component of it. I don't miss some other things, though. But, yeah. Especially since, and that's what I want to say next is, okay, we look at all those guys that got suspended.
Mm-hmm.
And here, a decade later, somebody can give you $1 million or whatever they want to give you, you know, it's no big deal.
Right, right.
And we back then it was like, we think an agent gave somebody a watch or something.
Right, right.
I mean, it was about that type of stuff, right?
Nah. So what initially started the investigation was, this is when Twitter is first coming out. So social media, Twitter is first coming out. And I actually got in trouble on Twitter. But Marvin had tweeted a lyric from a song. So the artist is Rick Ross. Marvin had tweeted a lyric that he had said in a song, and it was basically talking about like popping champagne or something like that. The crazy part about that whole situation was that Marvin didn't drink. That was the whole crazy thing about it. So it was like he was literally repeating the lyric. He typed the lyric out, but we don't understand social media at this time. So we thinking like, so everything that when social media first came out, it was like whatever you put out was like the reality.
Yeah.
So if you quoting somebody saying something, it's like that's your reality. That's not you quoting. And so that was what launched the investigation. That was a couple of reckless acts, if I'm being honest, but it wasn't nothing that could stick. So they had a couple party shots with Marv, with Kentuan chain on, but it's not a violation for him to wear a chain. You know what I mean? Marvin didn't have no money to pay for it. Marvin is just, Kentuan was mentoring Marvin. And so therefore, when Kentuan came home in the offseason, Kentuan let Marvin wear the Carolina boy chain, which again, still don't even make sense because Marvin is from DC. it's a bunch of stuff. This is like not adding up. It's like, it's just weird. I don't know, but it was one of those things. But now that tweet was the actual thing that kicked off the investigation.
Yeah. Marvin went to a party in Miami or something. And
which
paid the bill for him to go. And I don't know anything about
it. It was amazing because there was more. So Joe Hayden was there.
Yeah.
He didn't get on an investigation. Like it was a lot of top tier guys that was coming out, not out yet, but just coming out that was at the party. And they chose to choose him. But that still to from what I know, and based off having a conversation with a lawyer, that it's still not enough to do what they did. They did what they did was, in my opinion, is Carolina didn't have anyone with the understanding and knowledge of the law and the bylaws in regards to NCAA to get us out of the situation. We was trying to take this thing like head on, and just seeing like every situation we ever been in before, just like any other school, is here go a check. Let's just make this thing go away.
Yeah.
And this particular situation, they wanted to make an example out of us. And because Carolina thought that the basketball team was going to be saved, it was like, well, at least we can just, rely on the basketball team. They felt like they was going to be saved, so they allowed it to come through. But what they soon realized after that is, if you let a cancer in, the cancer going to spread. It ain't going to just stop with football. They going for everybody. You already let them in. You let them in the door. So then the basketball got hit and changed the whole trajectory of a lot of things as well.
Yeah, I mean, after the Music City Bowl, I'm driving home and I get a call from this little bird, and he's supposed to be good friends with Butch, telling me, "Hey, the word on the street is Butch is going to get let go. This thing's going to come down."
Yeah.
So, and then I signed a 2-year deal.
Mm-hmm.
But then, when all this stuff was coming around, all this inside knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
When I had an opportunity, I got out of there. I mean, because people were telling me, hey, man, if you got a chance to leave, you better get out because this thing's going to come down. And I didn't understand it. I really didn't understand it. But
nobody did. Nobody understood it.
The opportunity presented itself. So I was happy to have another opportunity to further my career. And and of course, come back to ECU. But the thing is that all I know is, in everything that I know about athletes and talent and depth and the coaching staff that we had, I really believe that we could have competed for a national title that year. No question about it. And I believe that Butch Davis might still be there. So,
Yeah, I don't see why it would be any different. Again, and now, I mean, just in hindsight, if you look at it, like they was aiming, this is when they was trying to aim and transition everything to SEC, where SEC become the powerhouse of everything. And ACC was losing momentum because of the academic requirements. So if you a lot of people couldn't get into the ACC schools because of academics. So they would go to SEC who had lower standards. Well, you know, if you get lower standards, you're going to get a better, some in most cases, you're going to get a better athlete, because at this point in time, we're not, school system is so broken in so many areas that we're not retaining the information that we need to score high on these difficult tests that they are asking us to take. But at that point in time, there was transitioning into like making college football what it is today, which is SEC football.
Right.
And so, what an opportune time to take out the biggest threat to SEC football, which is Carolina. But I really believe that it was a new situation that, in hindsight, if we can reverse time and look back over, all we had to do was stand firm and just continue to say no. Again, we was one no. I heard that out of the lawyer who was the lead lawyer on the investigation. I can't think of his name right now. I think I got his number in my phone. But he literally said that. Y'all was one no away, and this thing never happens. And if it never happens, I really truly believe we get to the national championship. Yeah. There's no doubt. There's no way you have that much respect across the country and you know, and it don't play out that way. Like literally everybody from the Alabamas to the Clemsons to the Ohio States to everybody was like, yo, Florida's, everybody was saying like, yo, y'all had people on the ropes, but y'all had people like really like, we got to play them. Cool. And just think about it, missing 18, I think it was 18 or 22 players. But anyway, missing 18 players, let's just take a low number. Missing 18 players, 11 starters, and lose at the end to LSU in the Chick-fil-A Classic, who went on to play, if I'm not mistaken, they was in a great bowl or either at the end in the championship game that year.
Yeah, we played Tennessee in the Music City Bowl.
Right.
That was the end of the year.
Exactly. So, you know, you taking all these things into consideration, it's like the sky was the limit for us. Like, that was the year. There's
LSU was our first game, and we dropped the pass in the end zone, I think. Like,
and if we don't do that, yeah, tight end Panato, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not going to knock Panato because he
– No. We had other things that we could have did. Yeah.
But at the same time, I mean, we're missing 11 starters and we're beating LSU. I mean, come on, man.
Make it make sense.
Yeah.
You gotta be honest. Like, yo, if they had it, who they needed, and they would have been – it wouldn't have been close. We would have shocked the world that night. If we had everybody and we beat LSU to start the year, oh, my gosh. That changes everything.
Yeah, I mean, no doubt about it. I mean, it's something that I think about a lot. And but woulda, coulda, shoulda, but for some reason, things went.
Yeah, we need reparations, man. We need something to, you know, give us our talent back, man. We need that opportunity again, because there's no way, man. There's no way. I mean, from draft picks to, you know, looking at the LSU game to beating Tennessee, like, it's just, it's no way. There's no way we don't get there. I can't see, bar injury, that's the only thing. But outside of that, hands down, we would have been there. We would have had to win it, but to make it, we would have did. You can't vote. You couldn't keep us out.
But I couldn't remember. Where did Marvin go? Did he start anywhere in the league?
He didn't start, but he was in New York with the Giants for 2 or 3 years.
Okay.
And then he kind of bounced around, and then he got out. And I'm actually praying for Marvin, man. He's going through a huge mental issue situation. So we're really trying to, you know, keep him lifting in prayers for him, try to get him the help that he need.
Yeah, and if I can help in any way there, please send me his number. I'll be happy to call him.
Yeah, no doubt.
I love to talk to him. You know, he always had some challenges, but it was understood.
Had a lot of pressure. Had a lot of pressure on him coming out of high school, and just his journey. A lot of weight. And what I realized is, even including myself, when you come from specific places and you're held to a high standard, but you don't have someone to mentor you and walk you through that,
yeah,
it's one of the most challenging and difficult things in life. I always tell people that you need a coach. Everybody needs a coach. And you can't get through this life alone. And the crazier this world gets and, you know, and whatnot, to have someone to bring you back to stability and allow you to actually understand this thing called life, it's powerful. And I mean, even the Bible tells us that we belong in a community, right? You know,
yeah.
One could put 1,000 away, two could put 10,000 away, you know? So it's like, you know, you need someone to be able to bring you back, hold you accountable, and just love on you in a different way. And that's what I think coaching is. Coaching is nothing but loving on you in a different way.
No doubt about that, brother.
Yeah.
Who do you stay in touch with?
Kevin is legit my right hand. I talked to Gene. He's coaching out there in Memphis, Germantown right now. So he's killing it. I think he really is in his purpose, his passion. So he's doing coaching. He's taking these kids in transitionary life. I've talked to Cam. Occasionally, me and Cam try to at least connect a couple of times. We went paintballing when I was in North Carolina, but now that I'm down here in Atlanta, it's a little different. But we do try to keep in contact on social media. Al, I went and did a camp with him and Vince Jacobs. They got this VTO sports, basically pre-combine / all-star game type program where basically high school kids come in and they train and do different things and try to enhance their talent to be able to compete at a high level at these all-star games and just get an opportunity to be seen.
Yeah, I was a straight beast out of the cradle.
Yeah, yeah, man, that's that country old man strength there.
No doubt.
Yeah. So, who else? Yeah, everybody else is kind of like through social media. So I talked to Trey. Yeah. Trey's about to be. I'm predicting it, but he's about to be like a reality TV star. He's got some real estate stuff that he's doing and he's doing well. I actually talked to Cersei a couple of times because I went back to North Carolina. I see Sean in passing.
Yeah.
So I see Sylvester online. But Zach, I think Zach is in South Carolina now. If he ain't moved to Charlotte, back to Charlotte, but he back in South Carolina. So I talk to him occasionally.
Yeah, I saw Trey on the ACC network.
Yeah, Trey got his hand in kind of everything. Yeah, he kind of doing the analyst. He kind of doing the social media stuff. And I think he was a part of like a HGTV special or something online. So with some real estate stuff. So yeah, Trey kind of got his hands in everything. You know, him and them boys.
I think he was still a young guy when I left there.
Trey was still young. Yeah. He was still young. He played safety, but he developed. He was a headhunter at Carolina, so he played well.
Yeah, before we wrap it up, I'd like for you to talk a little bit about your NFL experience and maybe, what are the factors that you think build success on a team in the NFL? What are some of the challenges when you play in the NFL? I mean, anything you can share there?
Yeah, let's see. So I'm actually working on something that's I'll be released. I can't speak on it now, but I'll release it and I'll come back on or something and talk to you about it once the details and all the paperwork and stuff signed. But what it takes to be successful in the NFL from a player perspective. I've never been a coach, but I got some opinions about it. But from a player perspective, balance. understanding that, understanding how to balance your life, finances, and relationships. I think we do a, well, me personally, I speak for myself. I did a great disservice to myself by not maximizing all the relationships. And I had people really wanting to be like a part of my life. And so I couldn't understand it, because when you transition into the league, there's certain language that I don't necessarily agree with now today, but in, you know, when I was in the midst, I felt like that. So when you in the midst, they say ball is everything. Like, it's everything. So sun up to sundown, you gotta think ball to be great. Where I agree with that, I've also seen the byproduct of that. So I've seen guys be great, and at the expense of them being great, they lose their family. So the average lifespan in the NFL right now is a little bit, just at 3 or a little bit under, right? So let's just say a great year, great career will probably be around 8 to 10 years. So if you give yourself 8 to 10 years, let's work with the positive. 8 to 10 years of nothing but ball, you lose your family. You lose the relationships or whatever. Now, granted, people will be around because you're in the NFL. However, the relationship won't actually be legitimized because it hasn't been tested. It's literally, I'm there because you're in the NFL, and I'm in hopes that you will be able to do something for me. And that's all the way around, whether that's an agent, that's a financial advisor, whatever it may be. So to balance that, know when to turn it off. Now, I was never great. I was good. I was never great because I kind of chose that route. Like, I prefer my faith, my family, and ball. Like, I wanted that to be kind of balanced. I didn't want to be so caught up in ball that my family lose touch of who I am. I can't go out and enjoy dinner or enjoy, you know, a date night with my wife or whatever, because I'm so caught up in ball. Now, there's a price that you have to pay to be great. And I'm okay with that. I don't think that was my path. My path was specifically to do what I came to do. And my second chapter of my life, I believe, will be way more greater than the first chapter in regards to career-wise. And so now I think that I'm in a service-based entrepreneur space, that's kind of what I'm seeing as my peak, where I'm going to thrive at the most. And that's difficult for a lot of people because of the money tangent that comes with being in the NFL and what I say that people idolizing money, because you're actually putting money above everything that you got going on. I got to get this bread. I got to get this contract. I got to get this. Instead of saying, like, is the price worth what it's going to cost me at the end of the day? So even if some of your favorite stars, Big C, are drowning in depression, drowning in anxiety, like can't even enjoy life no more because of the utopia that we was in, that was in for them 8 to 10 years, and now they out of it. Because one thing about ball gonna show you that when your time is up, your time is up. It don't care who you are. If it don't like you, you don't like it. When that air go out the ball, the air gone. It don't reinflate. It don't, you know, you don't get it another way. It's gone. And I think what I've been preaching to a lot of the cats these days is understanding the balance. Dedicate some time to being great, but also dedicate some time to being a great father, being a great husband, being a great friend, being a great brother, great uncle. Like, that stuff gonna carry you way further than ball ever would be.
Great advice.
Yeah. From a coach's stance, I think there's a shift that's making right now where, you know, when you coach me, you can get on me, and I, you know, I didn't see it as you belittling me or trying to take away. It was a way of life. It was you was coaching me and to being a great with it, to the great player that I was going to be. What I'm seeing now with these kids these days is they don't have the mental capacity to withstand that. So you have to, it's, I call it, well, I just learned some of the terminology, but it's like teach and catch, right?
Yeah.
So there's some kids who thirsty and hungry for it, and you could teach them. But it's some kids that you have to just continue to just drop it here, drop it here, drop it here, drop it here. And it may irritate you because you can't see the result immediately, but they're going to catch what you're putting down. And at the end of the day, it's going to switch. And it's going to change their life. And it'll change the trajectory of their journey by a milestone. And so what I'm thinking, when I say that in regards to coaching, I think we're in a time now where coaches need to understand that to coach this generation, we have to be more sensitive to the fact whether we're going to teach them or they're going to be something they're going to have to catch.
Yeah, there's a certain degree of diplomacy involved. And I think that's, mm-hmm. and also you have to, what I always believe that you have to coach each individual a little bit differently at times. And that's why I like to have one-on-one meetings with people a lot when I'm coaching.
Yes.
Just to give them the knowledge and understanding of why I was doing what I was doing and give them the understanding of this, the science behind it or whatever was behind it. But yeah, you coaches have to adapt to the times. Mm-hmm. I believe if I was still in it, I would have had to adapt it some, of course. I adapted some when I went from ECU to UNC and mm-hmm. I had to adapt some more when I went back to ECU. So,
right. Yeah. And it's not a bad thing. It's not that it's not you. Yeah. It's just you have to adapt to because I tell married couples, like, the ultimate goal is to win.
Yeah.
So if that takes me to reduce myself and help you come up, then that's what it is. Like, so, but I'm still being me. I'm just saying, like, okay, cool. I can get on cue, but I can't necessarily talk to Kev or whatever. Like, I gotta talk to him a certain way.
Yeah.
You didn't have a father. Kev had a father. So it's a whole different dynamic in regards to male leadership, just based off that alone. Like, understanding, like, if I ain't had no father in my house, then that discipline and structure that a man brings could be offensive.
Yeah.
And like you said, your one-on-ones was the game changer and life changer, because now it allows you to pour into him, but also be a display of what a man is.
Yeah.
And that's what we got from you on so many occasions. And to me, that's the difference between a winning team and a mediocre team.
Well, I want to tell you that I'm in school right now I went back to school to be a health and life coach.
Oh, Lord. How many degrees you want?
So this is just a one-year deal. But if you talk to Marvin, tell him I'm now studying to be a health and life coach, and I'd love to help him. He would be one of my I wouldn't charge him anything. He'd be an experiment for me. So I'm
for sure, for sure. And your service hours, I get it. I'm with it. When I reach out to him, and if I can get a hold of him, because sometimes you can't, but if you can get a hold of him, I definitely let him know that, you know, you willing to talk to him and speak with him, whatever. And I think, you know, kudos to you for going to get your certifications and your degree in regards to that. I think you'd be a hell of a life coach. Have changed some lives over a course of, several decades, but I commend you. And again, kudos to you for being an impact and, you know, taking yourself down to a place where you can elevate other people.
I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to challenge you for Easter. You know, I started a tradition where I get up and stand on my feet and watch the Passion of the Christ, and I'm not allowed to move until it's over. And I'm challenging some others to do the same.
Watch the whole movie standing up.
That's right.
Yeah.
You can't move. Maybe. You got to stay focused.
That's wild. Listen, it's a tremendous depiction of the greatest sacrifice we could ever embrace of ever.
Well, you know, Jesus Christ was all about compassion and love, but nobody talks about that he was the toughest human being in the history of the world and what he sustained and went through and suffered through for us, you know.
And I think that's strategic, but I also put the responsibility on us as believers in regards to stop relying on preachers and actually get into the word ourselves.
And no doubt.
Because once you do that, you start to see that that Jesus is on a whole nother level than what they are projecting him to be. So as much as they would like for us to think about Easter bunnies and eggs and Easter egg hunt or whatever, yeah, the true reason for the season is that he got up on that third day, and now we have access to God through him. So I'm tremendously honored. And yeah, I'm gonna do it. You proposed a challenge, so let's get it. I'm gonna put it, mark it down, and I'll do it. I
appreciate it.
If you want to do it on a specific day or just in general this weekend.
I do it on Easter.
Okay, so just do it on Easter Day. Okay.
Yeah. You can find the movie a lot of places, but
yeah, I got it on this. I got a third party network that I stream from. So yeah, that's easy. I'm sure it's already up there, but yeah, I would definitely do it. I'm with it.
Yeah, make sure you bring your handkerchief.
Listen, man, it's one of those things where it's like, man, yeah, we don't get it. I really wish I was living in his time, though, to be honest. I don't think I would appreciate him as much as I do now. But I just think that I don't know if I could have ignored what he brought in the 33 years that he was here. I know we only talk about, you know, the gospel, only talk about for the most part the 3 years of ministry, but like those 30 years of, you know, stripping off glory and taking on flesh it's so amazing to me that the humility of the guy that we serve did all of that with knowing that everybody still ain't gonna declare his name as Lord and Savior.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a spiritual battle every day that you got to prepare for, and that's why you got to get in that word, because if you look at the, you know, my website is armorlife.org, but if you check out the scripture on the armor of God, you know that sword is the only offensive weapon, so, and the sword is the word. So yeah. That's where we're at with that. But
So you got it from Ephesians 6, or?
Yeah, I don't remember it right offhand, but.
Yeah, because it talks about the helmet of salvation, the breastplate of righteousness, the belt of truth. Yeah, the word of the sword. Yeah.
Putting on the armor of God.
Each and every day.
Yeah, the shield, all the weapons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nah, that's true. And it's important. So, nah, I'm with you. Yeah, nah, that's dope. Yeah. But yeah, it's unbelievable what Jesus did for us, man. And I still have a hard time wrapping my mind around why people still don't believe. It makes no sense at all. But warriors that fight for it.
I really appreciate your time.
And, yeah, man.
It's been great to reconnect.
Oh, yeah.
And we can do it again sometime. Love to do it again.
Oh, yeah. Now, I definitely reach out and let you know about a little situation that I got going on in regards to helping. Well, we start with NFL, but then we're going to move into college as well. But it's a service-based program that I'm building to help retired NFL players, players currently, and collegiate players. And we got different brands, NBA, soccer. So it's a unique thing. And I definitely come on and break it down and we'll talk about it, and I get some of your expertise in regards to what you have seen over time. And it's a beautiful thing. I think it's going to be one of those things that's going to transcend the nation.
Yeah, and I did want to mention I had Kevin Colbert on. You might want to take a look at the, I've got all these archived on YouTube. Kevin Colbert, he was a vice president and GM of the Steelers for quite some time. And
yeah,
he started this thing called Lend a Hand, where he tries to get about 30 or 40 ex-Steelers together each month, and where they can kind of interact and help each other. Because, you know, once you get out of the league for a few years, sometimes you get lost, as you know.
Firsthand. My first 5 years was depression.
A lot of people have financial issues as well, because, mm-hmm. That money doesn't last as long as they think it's going to last.
It don't. And nobody without the expense of taking from you want to tell you where to put the money.
Yeah.
And that's the sad part about it, And that's why we had a 78% financial deficit rate right now as far as NFL retired players.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so.
Well, hey, much love to you and your family.
Likewise.
And, stay in that word.
Yes, sir.
Keep the faith. And yes, I'll be talking to you soon. And I'm happy to help your guy at Rendell Parrott Academy get him.
Yeah, my nephew. He was blown away. And then especially that you coached me, he was in my hip pocket forever. But, especially that you coached me, he really feel, that sense of connection. And he told me about how you, hand clean some weight while you was there in your cowboy boots. he was like, he still got it. Now he just went up there to the bar in the cowboy boots. I'm just thinking that he just gonna walk through it. I said, oh, no, you don't know Big C. I said, oh, no, he got to do it. He got to show you.
I'm going to consult with those guys a little bit and help them out. And also trying to get him a few more pieces of equipment and so forth there. And I think he's going to do a great job, man. So I'm excited for those guys to be successful next year. Cause I just love working with kids no matter where it's at. So it's all good.
Yeah. We appreciate it, man. I appreciate you, pouring into them and helping them out. Those kids love them there. And with your knowledge and expertise pouring into them, they can't help but be great. He already done changed the atmosphere, but to be able to have somebody you can rely on to really give you what you need when you need it is life changing. So we appreciate you for doing that.
Yeah, good stuff, man. Well, I'm gonna go ahead and sign off. We could talk for a long time, but we'll
get we with it.
And so this is Jeff Connors from Absolute Empowerment signing off. God bless. We'll see y'all next week. Thanks a lot, Q.
All righty, peace. Appreciate you, Big C.
You've been listening to Absolute Empowerment with Coach Jeff Connors on The Sports Objective. Join us every Monday night for a new edition of the show. Listen to the show pretty much everywhere podcasts are found. Be sure to follow us on social media at TheSportsOBJ on Twitter and TikTok, at The Sports Objective on Instagram. Like and follow our Facebook page and subscribe to our YouTube channel. As always, we appreciate you listening to the show, and go Pirates!